Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the bidder information session for the September 2025 solicitation, the second solicitation under PICO 6 Default Service Program or DSP 6. My name's Katie Orlandi, and I work for NERA Economic Consulting. NERA serves as the independent evaluator for PICO's DSP 6 program. With me today are Danny Honan and Luke Heald from NERA, who will be presenting. And also on the line are representatives from PICO who are available to help answer questions at the conclusion of the presentation. In today's presentation, we'll provide the relevant background information on the DSP6 program, details on the qualification and bidding process, and then we'll also cover solicitation-specific information, including the products available and the timeline. So all lines have been placed on mute, but you can ask written questions throughout the presentation. To ask a question, please click on the chat icon at the bottom of your screen, and the chat panel will appear on the right. You'll type in your question and click enter. If you have any technical difficulties throughout the presentation, you can also use the chat to get in touch with us, and someone will be available to help. So before I start, I want to note that any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by reference to such governing documents. So the governing documents are the Pennsylvania Public Utilities Commission order related to DSP6 and dated November 7, 2024, the RFP rules and the addendum to the RFP rules, which were posted on July 29th and August 12th, respectively. Also, the PICO Energy Company Pennsylvania Default Service Supplier Master Agreement, or Uniform SMA, as we'll refer to this document, which was posted on July 29th. So, all of these documents are currently available on picoprocurement.com. Documents related to the DSP6 proceeding with the Commission are posted to the regulatory page, and then the RFP documents and the contract are posted to the supplier information page. So, as I mentioned, NERA serves as the third-party independent evaluator for the solicitations under DSP6. Our role is to ensure a transparent process for the RFP. So, specifically, we're the main point of contact with RFP bidders. We ensure the RFP rules approved by the Commission are followed and the qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. We'll evaluate the bids on a price-only basis on the bid date, and then we present the results to the Commission. The agenda for today's call is as follows. In the first half of the presentation, I'm going to provide background on the DSP6 program. I'll also provide specific information for this September, including the products available and an overview of the RFP process, contract, and rates. In the second half of the presentation, Danny's going to provide details on how to qualify to bid, and then Luke will go over the bid submission process and a short overview of the RFP website and how you can get in touch with us throughout the procurement. At the end, we'll also answer any questions that we receive throughout the presentation. So, under DSP6, PICO will procure full requirements service for their default service customers. Default service customers are those customers that do not elect to take service from an electric generation supplier or return to PICO after receiving service from an EGS. As listed here in bullet four, full requirement service includes energy, capacity, ancillary services, certain transmission services, and Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard or AEPS Act requirements. Under DSP6, solicitations will be held in each March and September from 2025 through 2028 for a total of eight solicitations. Supply is generally procured for the period of June 1, 2025 to May 31st, 2029, but some contracts available towards the end of the program will extend beyond this period. There were two significant changes for DSP6 relative to DSP5. So first, a capacity proxy price true-up mechanism was added to the contract to handle delays in PJM's reliability pricing model. And I'm going to provide the capacity proxy price for this procurement and some details on that true-up in the contract section of this presentation. And then the second change was to increase the load cap for the consolidated large commercial and industrial or CCI class products. And it means that suppliers can bid on more tranches in order to supply a larger portion of the default load for this class. There is no product available for the CCI class in this procurement. It'll be available in each of the March events. So, in this September solicitation, products are available for the residential and small commercial classes. The residential class consists of all residential customers, and the small commercial class consists of commercial customers with less than 100 kW of annual peak demand. The payment structure, available contract lengths, and procurement frequency for each class is provided here in this table. So, suppliers of products for the residential and small commercial classes are paid on the basis of the supplier's average winning bid price for each megawatt hour of load served. The bid is an all-in price. Products for these two classes are available twice a year in both the March and the September solicitation, and the contracts are for laddered and overlapping 12-month and 24-month supply periods. Again, a product for the CCI class will be next available in March 2026. For each class, the default load is divided into a number of tranches so that each tranche represents a fixed percentage of the load for the class. So for the residential class, there are a total of 62 tranches, and each tranche represents 1.6% of the default load for this class. There are 24 tranches for the small commercial class, and each tranche represents 4.17% of the default load. This slide here also provides the total and default peak information and an approximate megawatt measure for each class. This data here on the slide was updated as of July 2025, relevant to the 25-26 planning year. So, the naming convention for each product that's available in the solicitation is as follows. Each product has three labels. First is the customer class served, second is the length of the supply period, and third is the date of the start of the supply period. So, there are two products available in the solicitation for the residential class. There's a 12-month and a 24-month product. The supply period for both of these products starts on December 1st, 2025. Same for the small commercial class. The available tranches are for 12 and 24-month products starting December 1st, 2025. There are load caps that apply so that a supplier cannot supply more than a certain percentage of the default load for a class at any point in time. The load caps in this solicitation will account for products won in solicitations under DSP5 and DSP6 and have a supply period that overlap with the products available in this solicitation. So, suppliers for the residential and small commercial classes cannot supply more than 50% of default load at any time. On this slide, again, we have the available tranches and then an overview for how to calculate load caps for each product and class. So for the 12-month product, again, there are 12 available tranches. And for the 24-month product, there are 9 tranches available. As I mentioned before, there are a total of 62 tranches for this class and a load cap of 50%. So in the case of the residential class, load caps will be calculated as 31 tranches, which is 62 times 50%, minus the tranches that supplier is currently serving for products with a supply period that overlaps the upcoming supply period. And so this table here provides a list of the products that have a term that overlap with the upcoming supply period. So you can use this table to calculate your supplier-specific load caps, but we'll also provide these to you when we provide qualified bidders with a custom bid form. Load caps are calculated the same way for the small commercial class. There's two products available, six tranches for the 12 month, three tranches for the 24 month product. So for load caps, there are a total of 24 tranches for this class. So suppliers are constrained on the number of tranches they can bid to 12 tranches minus the number of tranches they're currently supplying. So that completes the overview of the products. In this next section, I'm going to provide an overview of the RFP process, and we'll start here with the schedule. So the RFP process is going to kick off in a couple of weeks with the opening of the Part 1 form, and then it'll proceed over 4 to 5 weeks. The application process is in two parts. So first, applicants submit the Part 1 proposal with their qualification materials beginning September 3rd. That's when the Part 1 window opens. The Part 1 proposal must be submitted by noon on the Part 1 date on September 9th. Applicants that qualify will be notified by us that they can submit a Part 2 proposal on the Part 1 notification date on September 11th. Then the following day, applicants can begin submitting the Part 2 proposal materials, which includes posting pre-bid security, and the Part 2 proposal due date is September 18th. Bidders are notified whether they've qualified to submit bids on the Part 2 notification date on September 22nd, and then the bid date is the next day on Tuesday, September 3rd. By September 24th, the day after the bid date, the independent evaluator will submit its report on the RFP and the results to the commission, and then the commission is expected to render a decision on whether to accept the results by close of business on September 25th. The RFP results on the bid date are contingent on final commission approval. So, as I mentioned, we will submit a confidential report on the winning bids to the PUC by the day after the bid date, and then the commission will issue a decision within one business day of receipt of that report. Then, 15 days after the bid date, some information, which includes the average winning bid price, will be posted to PECOProcurement.com. The proposal process is entirely online. You're going to submit your Part 1 and Part 2 materials through online forms or by email. These materials include providing required information about the bidder and supporting documents. Bidders will be required to upload or email signature pages that we refer to as inserts. These inserts are provided by us in Microsoft Word format, and each insert contains instructions for completing and signing. The pre-bid letter of credit, which must be used for pre-bid security with the Part 2 proposal, must be submitted as an electronic PDF file to our email address. And we'll provide a lot of detail on that in the second half of the presentation. So this slide provides a screenshot for where you can download those inserts, which again are certifications that need to be signed by an officer. They're already posted and available for you to download and begin working on. They're grouped in three different ways. So applicants that are new, meaning that you did not qualify in March 2025, which was the first solicitation held under DSP 6, you'll need to download the zip file labeled P1 Inserts New Bidders. Applicants that qualified in March 2025 under DSP 6 but did not have winning bids should use the zip file labeled P1 Inserts Previously Qualified Bidders. And then applicants that had winning bids in March 2025 under DSP 6 should download the file labeled P1 Inserts Default Suppliers. It's important that you start with the right set of inserts. So if you have any questions about your status, go ahead and email us. Also, currently posted and seen at the bottom of this screenshot is a zip file called P2 Inserts Early. This contains the inserts that require a signature and are due with the Part 2 proposal. We post them early and we would accept them along with the Part 1. This would just enable your officer to make all certifications at once if that's more convenient. If you're a new applicant and you've not yet registered for an account to access the online forms to submit a proposal, you should do that now. You can register by going to picoprocurement.com and clicking on the Contact Us page on the link on the left-hand side, and then clicking on Register for an Account. Alternatively, you can send an email to picoprocurement@nero.com with the information that is requested here on this slide. It's the individual that registers for the account that's going to receive an email prior to the Part 1 window with activation instructions and screenshots for how to set up your account. So, current account holders do not need to re-register through the website or by email. A current account holder is an applicant that qualified to participate in a solicitation in 2023 or later, or an account holder that registered in 2023 or later. So, for a bidder that qualified in an applicable solicitation, the representative in that latest solicitation will receive an email with an activation link prior to opening of the Part 1 form. If you're an account holder as of 2023 but have not participated, it's the individual that registered for the account that's going to get this email. When we send the activation link, we'll also send instructions to access and complete the online forms, and they'll include screenshots for how to activate your account. Once your account is active, you can navigate to the online forms directly by going to dspproposal.com, or you can access it through the RFP website on both the left-hand and right-hand side of the homepage. So this next section provides details on the contract and rates. The uniform SMA for DSP 6 was unchanged from DSP 5, except for the addition of a capacity proxy price true-up mechanism. We provide here a link on this slide to a red line of the current DSP 6 contract compared to DSP 5. This red line was filed with the petition for DSP 6, and we're providing it in case it helps ease in any legal review process that you need to undertake if you haven't participated since DSP 5. So, notably, Appendix 6 to the SMA includes the PJM billing statement line items and identifies the responsible party, either PICO or the default supplier, for each item. Also, default suppliers will be required to complete an Appendix H each year. Appendix H is the form of generation supply report and requests a percentage breakdown of the energy supplied by source for the year. This completed appendix is required to be submitted to PICO by March 31st of each calendar year. Lastly, RFP bidders that adhere to the ISDA US stay protocol may elect for both the RFP bidder and PICO to execute Appendix I at the point of contract execution in order to incorporate terms of the ISDA US stay protocol. Please be aware that RFP bidders that win in this solicitation and did not win in March 2025 will be required to sign a new uniform SMA for DSP 6. This slide provides an overview of the capacity proxy price mechanism under the uniform SMA. So, if the results for the BRA under PJM's reliability pricing model for a delivery year that's relevant to a product in the solicitation are not announced by PJM at least 5 business days prior to the bid date, then a capacity proxy price is established for that delivery year. So, since the BRA result for 2728 is not going to be available, we're going to provide the relevant CPP for that delivery year on the next slide. If a CPP is established for a delivery year, a true-up mechanism that's described in the capacity supplement in the transaction confirmation is going to become effective for the product. So, as described in that supplement, a true-up will take place in each billing month of the delivery year for which the CPP is used. Through an additional line item on the invoice, the supplier will be paid or will pay the difference between the actual capacity price charged through PJM's RPM and the CPP multiplied by that default supplier's share of the capacity obligation for each day of the month. So essentially, winning bidders are made whole for the difference between the CPP that's established now and the actual capacity price that they're required to pay to PJM for capacity. So, as described by the RFP rules and the SMA, the capacity proxy price equals the average of the most recent results under PJM's RPM for the two most recent delivery years for which PJM has held a capacity auction. The capacity proxy price applicable for 27-28 for this solicitation is $299.93, which is shown here in this table. Again, the capacity proxy price applies only to the delivery year of the product for which the PJM BRA result is not available. This slide provides a short overview of the credit requirements under the Uniform SMA. For the fixed price products, credit exposure to PECO is calculated based on mark-to-market exposure that is net of accounts receivable or accounts payable to the supplier. Whether a supplier has to submit financial guarantees during the term of the SMA depends on a credit evaluation that's specified in the contract. Each RFP bidder will receive the results of the credit evaluation from PECO based on financial documents and ratings that are provided with the proposal. With the part one notification. So you'll have the credit evaluation back well ahead of contract execution. If a financial guarantee is required, it can be posted in the form of cash, a letter of credit, or in the form of a guarantee. And there's standard forms of both the guarantee and the post-bid letter of credit provided as exhibits to the Uniform SMA. Default suppliers are responsible for providing alternative energy credits during the term of the Uniform SMA for PECO to comply with the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard Act, as well as other orders and regulations and rules. So, an alternative energy credit is issued for each megawatt hour of generation from a qualified alternative energy system. All solar credits must be compliant and eligible to be retired in Pennsylvania in accordance with Act 40, and all Tier 2 credits must also be compliant with Act 114. If any requirement under the AEPS Act changes during the term of the Uniform SMA, then it's the default supplier that is responsible to comply with any new obligations. The current obligation for each type of AAC is provided here at the bottom of this slide. Notably, during the transaction confirmation process, each winning bidder will be required to specify the average cost for each type of AAC. So, under the terms of the Uniform SMA, a default supplier's AEPS obligation may be reduced by a number of AECs that are allocated by PECO to default suppliers in the transaction confirmation. The number of AECs per tranche that will be allocated are provided here in this table. Notably, any PECO AECs allocated remain the property of PECO and are not transferred to the default supplier. This slide provides just a few details here on rates. So, default service rates for a class are calculated on the basis of prices determined through the RFP, and incorporate quarterly true-up and administrative costs. For the residential class, rates also include purchases by PECO to serve approximately 1% of the default load, and information on how PECO serves this 1% is provided in the rules. PECO also offers time of use default service rate options for the residential and small commercial default service customers with smart meters. The TOU options will not be applicable to customers in PECO's customer assistance program. There's a default service rate calculation model that's available on PECO's website, and you can access that model through the link provided here on this slide. On this final slide here in this section, I have some details on PECO's agreement with the New York Power Authority. So, under a multi-state agreement, PECO receives for the benefit of its residential customers an annual allocation of capacity and associated energy from the St. Lawrence Hydroelectric Project operated by the New York Power Authority. The allocation is dependent upon the number of residential customers that PECO serves and its 5.807 megawatts for energy year 25-26. So, to be clear, a supplier's residential tranches are the share of the default load for the residential class that excludes this allocation. So, with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn over the presentation to Danny.
Okay, great. Thank you, Katie. In this section, I will go over the details of the RFP process and how to qualify. This will include both the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals. We also encourage you to refer to both the RFP rules and the addendum to the RFP rules. The RFP process proceeds through several stages. The first stage is the optional alternate guarantee process, which I'll discuss in the following slide, but is strictly optional, and the first deadline related to this process has already passed. All applicants that want to qualify to submit bids must complete the Part 1 proposal to meet the qualification standards of the RFP. Only RFP bidders that have successfully completed the Part 1 proposal can move on to the Part 2 proposal. Bidders that submit a successful Part 1 proposal will be able to participate in bid submission training, and bidders that successfully complete the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals will become eligible to submit bids on the bid date. As I mentioned on the last slide, the alternate guarantee process is entirely optional, and the first deadline related to the alternate guarantee process has now passed. This process is for RFP bidders that have corporate policies that preclude them from using the standard form of the guarantee appended to the uniform SMA. Bidders may submit an alternate form of guarantee and request consideration from PECO for use of that alternate form. The deadline for requests for review was August 12th. Separately, RFP bidders will have the opportunity to propose modifications to the standard guarantee during the Part 1 window. So, for purposes of completing the Part 1 proposal, there are three types of bidders. The online Part 1 form is dynamic and allows for an abbreviated process for default suppliers and previously qualified bidders, meaning that these bidders will be able to skip certain sections or items that they've already completed in a prior solicitation under DSP 6. The three types of bidders are new bidders that have not yet submitted a successful Part 1 proposal under DSP 6. Previously qualified bidders that have submitted a successful Part 1 proposal under DSP 6 but have not won tranches, and default suppliers that have qualified and won tranches and executed the uniform SMA with PECO under DSP 6. As I go through the next couple of slides, there will be notes to let you know which bidders must submit the information. So there are six discrete requirements for the Part 1 proposal. First, applicants submit contact information for the RFP bidder and the officer who will be able to execute the contract and bind the bidder. This individual will be responsible for signing all the certifications and representations in both the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals. The representative is the individual who will serve as the main point of contact for the bidder, and optionally, the bidder may submit contact information for up to three nominees who will be copied on correspondence between the bidder and the independent evaluator. Second, bidders must submit financial information, including the most recent quarterly financial statements and credit ratings. Additional information will be required for bidders submitting a proposal under an agency agreement. Third, bidders are required to submit information to prepare the uniform SMA should they have winning bids. If the bidder elects not to provide this information with the Part 1 proposal and does have winning bids, they will be required to provide it after the bid date. Next, the officer is required to make a number of representations and certifications, including accepting the terms of the uniform SMA and agreeing to the RFP rules. Bidders have the option to submit the representations required by the Part 2 proposal during the Part 1 window for early processing. Fifth, bidders that are foreign entities or relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor will be required to provide additional documents for execution of the SMA. Drafts of these documents can be submitted with the Part One proposal. Lastly, the sixth section is provided for bidders to explain why any required information was not provided or upload any additional documentation. And again, the Part One proposal is due by Tuesday, September 9th. During the Part One window, bidders have the opportunity to request modifications to the standard letters of credit and the standard guarantee. This process is optional. Any proposed modifications should be provided in Microsoft Word format with track changes clearly showing all requested modifications. PIGO will review, and a response to the standard pre-bid letter of credit or standard guarantee will be provided within 2 business days. For the post-bid letter of credit, a response will be provided within 7 business days. Any new modifications are then added to the lists of acceptable modifications that are currently posted to the RFP website, so any bidder can use an approved modification on these lists, even if they were not the one that requested it. We encourage bidders to review the lists of acceptable modifications that have already been approved by PICO before proposing modifications. When you submit the online form, we will promptly review your submission. After you submit, your access to the online form will be temporarily removed. You will either receive a complete notice, meaning all required information has been provided, or a deficiency notice listing the items that are deficient or require clarification. Bidders will receive notice about the status of their proposal on the same business day if the submission was received before noon. If the submission is received after noon, the bidder will receive notice by noon on the next business day. Bidders are generally given until the Part One date or 1 business day to respond to a first deficiency notice. Bidders that complete the Part One proposal will be notified whether they're qualified to submit a Part Two proposal by the Part One notification date on Thursday, September 11th. The Part One notification also includes a credit assessment, a customized bid form, and instructions on how to submit the bid form, and confidential login information necessary to participate in the bid submission training and on the bid date. Next, for the Part Two proposal, bidders submit an online form with supporting documents, including additional certifications and representations made by the officer. RFP bidders that are relying on the financial standing of a guarantor or with a foreign entity as the bidder, guarantor, or principal will have additional requirements. For example, bidders relying on the financial standing of a guarantor must submit a letter of intent to provide a guarantee signed by the guarantor. All bidders must submit a pre-bid letter of credit as part of the Part Two proposal. The pre-bid letter of credit must be submitted as an electronic PDF file via electronic means only to picoprocurement@nira.com. All of the materials required with the Part Two proposal are due by Thursday, September 18th. The pre-bid letter of credit must be in an amount of $250,000 per tranche bid on the residential and small commercial products. This means the maximum amount to post for a bidder planning to bid on all tranches available is 7.5 million. Please note that depending on bidder-specific load caps based on the number of tranches currently being served, it is possible that you won't be able to bid on all of the tranches. All bidders must use the standard form of the pre-bid letter of credit or only incorporate approved modifications that are posted to the RFP website. That concludes the section on qualification. I'm now going to pass the presentation to Luke, and he'll provide an overview of the bid submission process and RFP website.
Thank you, Danny. As mentioned, we will now move into discussing the bid submission and post-bid processes. A bid is a price in dollars per megawatt hour for one tranche of a product. The bid is automatically rounded to the nearest cent using standard rounding rules. The officer will be required to certify that the bids submitted are binding until 6 business days after the bid date. A bid must be supported by sufficient pre-bid security, and the independent evaluator will verify this is the case when reviewing a bidder's bid form. The bids will be evaluated by the independent evaluator on a price-only basis. This slide provides an example of the bid form. The independent evaluator provides each bidder a personalized bid form to be submitted on the bid date, as well as for training purposes for bid submission training with its Part 1 notification. The bid form provides an area for the bidder to enter prices, where a price in each cell serves as a bid on a single tranche. The bid form will provide running totals for the bidder's convenience, as well as check whether the bids entered in the bid form exceed any load caps that the bidder may have. Load caps will be hard-coded by the independent evaluator for each bidder. Bids must be submitted between 10 a.m. and noon Eastern Time on Tuesday, September 23rd, which is the bid date. Bids are submitted online through a secure file transfer system. A member of the independent evaluator team will call the bidder and confirm receipt within 30 minutes of receiving the submission. Bidders will have the opportunity to correct any errors, if there are any, and it's for this reason that we encourage all bidders to submit early. Bidders will have at minimum 10 minutes to resubmit a non-conforming bid form. This process is further outlined in the bidder guide provided with the Part 1 notification. By 3 p.m. on the bid date, the independent evaluator will inform any bidders that submitted bids whether any of their bids are being identified to the commission as lowest price bids. The results remain provisional until approved by the commission, whose decision is expected to be made by September 25th. Bidders are encouraged to participate in a training session on September 17th, during which members of the independent evaluator team will be available to answer questions about the bid submission process, and bidders will be able to practice the bid date procedures in full. Following the independent evaluator's notification to bidders on the bid date, bidders will be asked to provide information to prepare the uniform SMA and guarantee, if not already provided with the Part 1 proposal. The commission is expected to provide its decision regarding the results by September 25th, at which point the independent evaluator provides PICO with the uniform SMA, transaction confirmations, and guarantee. PICO will then execute these contract documents and send the documents to winning bidders to execute using a digital signature, as well as to post any additional security as necessary by September 30th. 15 days after the bid date, the independent evaluator will post certain information about winning bid prices on the RFP website, namely the weighted average winning bid price by product and the number of tranches of each product procured. The name of winning suppliers will not be released. Finally, we will provide some information related to the RFP website, picoprocurement.com. The RFP website is the central source of information related to the RFP, including supplier and regulatory documents, a data room containing historical data, a calendar page containing important dates related to the solicitation, a Contact Us page where you can register to receive emails regarding the RFP, and an archive page with materials provided in previous solicitations and the results of previous solicitations. Bidders can ask the independent evaluator questions through the Contact Us page of the website, pictured in the screenshot below, or by emailing picoprocurement@nira.com. The independent evaluator aims to answer questions within 2 business days and post questions in their answers to the RFP website on the FAQs page after removing any identifying information from bidders. This now concludes the presentation portion of the webcast.